Chapter 4. Styles sleeps restlessly and has bad dreams. When he wakes up the next morning, he texts his dad about the possibility of Phil being the murderer. Naturally, Tom hates this idea, but he agrees to check into it. He texts Styles later to say that Phil was accounted for during the murder of Tim Marciano, but not either of the others. It's not as conclusive as Styles would like. The entire pack heads home that weekend. Everyone is on high alert. Styles actually leaves Thursday night, skipping his Friday classes, along with a few of the others. He spends almost all day Friday going around Beacon Hills, talking to different people and reassuring them that he was on the case, and that he was doing his best to figure out what was going on. He told everybody that there was no sign of forced entry at any of the crime scenes, something that really pissed his father off, since he wasn't supposed to share that sort of information, and advised them not to let anyone into their homes unless they were 100% trustworthy. Deaton went around with him and offered to help do wards for various people and families. Some of them took him up on it, some didn't. They also identified various threats to different kinds of creatures, and Styles talked about how they could avoid them or work up remedies to treat them, should the worst happen. By the time the rest of the pack arrives, Friday night, he's exhausted, and all he wants to do is crawl under his bed for a while. Instead, he gets takeout barbecue and sits down with the pack. They're safe as houses at the den, usually, but everyone is uneasy. Styles meets with his father and Chris Argent the next day, and he's surprised at how tired Chris looks. There's a lot more gray at his temples than he remembers seeing even a couple weeks ago. "You okay?" he asks, and Chris snaps that he's fine. Styles supposes that he wouldn't like being asked that any better than Chris does. "Look, I've done what I can for damage control," Styles says, and tells Chris about what he's been doing. Chris grimaces a little, as if to say he doesn't really think that will help. "I'm thinking about trying to identify some other likely targets and then setting up surveillance. Can you help me go through the residents and identify the ones that you would kill if only you had a little bit more evidence?" "Sure," Chris says. 2 hours later, he's left with a list of a dozen houses and a lot of work to do. He feels exhausted again. How is he going to do this? He's got a test he's supposed to be studying for, papers he needs to write. "Maybe I should just take a leave of absence," he says glumly, looking at the list. Tom frowns at him. "Why?" "I don't know, Dad," Styles says. "I just don't feel like I'm going to be able to keep my grades up while all this bullshit is going on. I should be here, and I know we had an agreement, but you know as well as I do that all this makes the territory look vulnerable. If I'm not even here, that makes it even worse. I have to have priorities." "Well, it would be nice," Tom says dryly. Styles chews on his pencil and says, "I don't even know why I'm going to college, Dad. I know you want me to, and I'm enjoying it, but maybe it's time I come to terms with the fact that this is my life. This is what's going to take up my time. It's not like Derek doesn't make enough money to support us both. It's not like I have to work." He sees his father looking skeptical and continues, "What am I going to do anyway? All the kinds of jobs I would want to take are in big cities. I can't make a living as a forensic scientist or a cold case detective in Beacon Hills. At most, I could be a regular cop, and you know I can't really do that. I'm just too fucking jumpy. So what's the point of any of this?" "Hey," Tom says, giving him a light whap upside the head. "You're way too smart to resign yourself to being a housewife. Not that I don't have the highest respect for housewives. Your mother was one, and she was one of the most amazing people I'll ever meet. But you wouldn't be happy that way, and you know it." He sighs, looking at the dark circles underneath Styles' eyes. "I'm not saying I have all the answers, or that things will be easy. And maybe you're right and taking a leave of absence for this semester until this particular incident is straightened out is a good idea. But don't give up on the idea of having a future. Because this war is going to end. And whoever's targeting you, if it is that Stoddard guy, or if it's somebody else, we're going to bring him to justice. And you are going to live the life you want. Even if I have to start breaking skulls. Capiche? Okay, Dad, Stiles says, smiling despite himself. I guess I'll see how the next week or so goes, before I make a final decision about the semester. Does that seem fair? More than, Tom says, tousling his hair. And don't be too hard on yourself, okay? Nobody expects you to be able to do everything. Stiles sighs and gets up. I'd better be going, he says. Allison was going to bring Jake and Phil over for the evening. Hopefully I can get some schoolwork done while everyone else has a Street Fighter tournament. Have fun, Tom says, waving. Stiles hops in the Jeep and heads back to the den. Everyone's had dinner with their families, and they trickle in during the next half hour. Stiles makes himself a quick sandwich, since he didn't eat at his father's, and thinks about baking something. He reminds himself that he has reading to do. Allison is the last to arrive, with Jake and Phil in tow. Stiles greets both of them and gives Phil a quick hug, and then a Jell-O cup, because he had never had Jell-O before this week, and now he's obsessed with it. Everything armed? Stiles asks Allison in an undertone. Allison nods. Gates closed and turned on. Doors are locked. My mom sent me with some food. She said that Dad mentioned you looked tired, and you might not have had a chance to do any baking lately, so... She sets down a cloth bag and starts rooting around in it, pulling out two Ziploc bags full of homemade garlic bread. Oh, and last but not least, my dad sent this over, she adds, pulling out a brown lunch bag and setting it down on the table. A present from Chris Argent? Stiles asks, grinning. What is it? He didn't tell me, actually, Allison says, and rolls her eyes. He said it was a surprise. He even made me promise not to look. I think it has something to do with my birthday being in a couple weeks. He's probably trying to put something ridiculous together and doesn't want me to know about it. Well, then, don't look, Stiles says, laughing as he unfolds the top of the bag. He's about to open it when he sees Derek staring at him intensely. What is it? I'm not. Derek gives a shiver. Something's wrong. I don't think you should open it. Stiles stops. He has no idea what might be wrong, but he trusts Derek's instincts. And he knows that the werewolf has senses that far outstrip his own. Do you smell something? He asks, feeling around for what might be happening. He trusts Chris. He's trusted Chris with his life. Allison, did your dad give this bag to you directly?
Yeah, I didn't...
Allison starts. Before she can finish the sentence, Derek reacts. He grabs the bag from Stiles' hands and throws it as hard as he can. It goes through the open window, breaking through the screen. A bare moment later, an explosion goes off that rocks the entire house on its foundations. Stiles goes sprawling into the floor, as do most of the others. He fumbles around groggily for a minute, trying to regain his bearings. His ears are ringing, and there's dust and debris everywhere. It's brighter than before, and he thinks parts of the wall have actually disintegrated. The floor is covered in shattered glass. Get up! Derek's got him around the waist and is dragging him to his feet. Stiles stumbles and nearly falls flat onto his face. Derek keeps him upright while his mind flounders around and tries to figure out what's going on. Why would Chris send them a bomb? His daughter is here. Jake and Phil are here. Chris is their friend, their ally. Nothing about this makes sense. They're halfway to the front door when he hears a loud pop and the high-pitched whine of a bullet going past his ear. Chris Argent has excellent aim, and a portion of his brain notes that the bullet clearly wasn't for him. As it turns out, it was for Scott, who collapses backwards. Boyd and Isaac have him back on his feet a moment later, and he's pale but healing, Fall back! Styles shouts. Armory! There are multiple reasons for this. They've never really thought a lot about being attacked at the den. Their security is good enough that it hasn't been a concern. But Chris knows how to get past their security. He helped Styles design and build it. And since he knows all the loopholes, Styles knows approximately when and how he's going to strike. The bomb was meant to kill them if possible and disorient them if not. Then he knows they would make for the front because that was the most accessible entrance. They could go to the back door, but there are booby traps of Styles' own design there. They know how to avoid them and get over the back fence, but it would take time and organization. They have neither. So it's the armory Styles chooses. It doubles as a panic room. It's also the only place in the house where they keep non-lethal weaponry like tasers and pepper spray. And he'll be damned if they shoot Chris before he knows what the fuck is going on. One thing it isn't, however, is large. With the entire pack plus Phil crammed in, it's practically like a sardine can. Danny slams the door shut behind the last person in, but Styles hesitates before turning the lock. Count off! He shouts, and the pack begins calling out numbers. There are too many of them now to do a quick and accurate headcount, especially if people are moving. So he gave each of them a number, in alphabetical order. And now when he needs to make sure everyone is okay, they do a quick roll call. Allison shouts one. The others count off. Jake is seven and I've got Phil. And Styles himself is last. He flips the lock and punches in the security code. Bare moments later, there's a hard rapping sound. I know you're in there, Chris says. Chris, what the fuck? Styles says. Don't tell me you haven't always known this would happen, Chris says, his voice rough. You didn't think I would let you cause trouble forever, did you? Styles just stares at the door, unable to think of a valid response. He's literally got nothing. Allison elbows past him. Dad, have you lost your mind? Allison, come on out of there, Chris says. We're going to need to talk about this, but I won't hurt you, I promise. I'm not coming out until you promise you're not going to hurt my friends, Allison says. Chris gives a heavy, drawn-out sigh. They're not your friends, Allison. I know that you think they are, but think about everything they've done. Styles started a war between hunters. We have to put a stop to it. We have to stop him. Scott taps Styles on the shoulder and holds up his phone. No signal, he mouths. Styles grimaces but nods. He's not surprised. Chris is the one who got him the cell phone jammer that he uses, so it makes sense that he would have one of his own. And he wouldn't want Styles calling the cavalry. Any cavalry. Allison, keep trying to talk some sense into him, Styles says, and turns to the others. He elbows Boyd while doing so and apologizes. The claustrophobia is starting to set in. The armory doesn't even have any windows. It's basically a steel-reinforced room. Styles takes a moment to take a few deep breaths and remain calm. There's no back way out of here, is there? Allison asks. Styles shakes his head. No, we never figured we would need one. We've got weapons galore. But in this confined space, it would be almost impossible to do anything without causing some sort of chain reaction and killing ourselves as well as him. We could open the door and pepper spray him, Isaac suggests. This is Chris fucking Argent, Scott says. You think a little pepper spray is gonna slow him down? Derek shakes his head. Scott's right. We'd need a lot more than that. But this doesn't make any sense, Lydia says. Are you listening to what he's saying? He sounds like he's reciting from some sort of manual. It's the sort of thing you hear when you have a hostage on the phone, being told what to say. What if someone is forcing him to do this? What if they've kidnapped Victoria or something? I think you'd need a small army to kidnap Victoria Argent, Styles says. And that army couldn't save you from what Chris would do afterwards. But you have a point. He tunes back in to Allison and Chris's conversation. Allison is saying,
Dad, I know you. This isn't you.
Chris's reply is, this was always going to happen. Styles couldn't keep me blinded to his nature forever. Styles elbows back over to the door.
Okay, Chris, I'll bite. What did I do in the last 72 hours that has you convinced I need to die?
It's not something new, Chris says. It's everything. Everything you've done.
Can you be a little more specific? Styles asks. Give me examples of what I've done to deserve execution under the code.
This has nothing to do with the code, Chris says, and that sets off every red alert in Styles' brain. He looks at Allison, who just stares at him, open-mouthed. It has to be magic, Scott says. Seriously, that's the only answer, right? Someone's messed with his head. That's the most logical thing Styles has heard in the past half hour, but it hardly explains everything. Chris has protections against magic, the same ones that he has. When someone had found a way around that over the summer for Styles, it had taken them weeks to figure out how. They had ruled out almost every possibility. The protection spell that Chris wore would keep him safe from any magic, unless somebody had gotten some of his hair or blood. And Chris is just as careful about those things as he is. It's not like he allows complete strangers to wander around his house. An idea suddenly occurs to Styles. An awful idea that makes his stomach do a sudden barrel roll. He looks over at Phil. Sweet, innocent Phil, who ran away from his hunter parents, their enemies, whose arrival had predated the beginning of the murders by only a few days, who wanted to be an actor, who was quite possibly a good enough one to keep them all blind as to his intentions. Phil looks as terrified as the rest of them, but that doesn't convince Styles. He leans over and murmurs into Derek's ear. Tell me if Phil smells afraid. Derek gives him a frown, and then his eyes widen slightly as he boards Styles' train of thought. He lets out a quiet breath and gently slides through the crowd over to Phil.
Hey, Chris, Styles says. Am I correct in thinking that you murdered the Walcotts?
Yeah, Chris says. His voice is a little further away now.
Smart, Styles thinks.
He's setting up at the end of the hall for a sniper shot. If he stays too close, they might be able to wrestle the gun away from him. The armory is at the end of the hallway. There's nowhere they'd be able to go except forward, into his sights. But it also gives them room for a plan.
Can I ask why you did that?
Because it was about time that somebody cleaned up Beacon Hills, Chris replies. Allison covers her mouth with one hand and turns away, looking sick. But Styles nods, a few of the pieces falling into place. If Chris was under the influence of magic, if someone was forcing him to kill the supernatural residents of Beacon Hills, he would go for the people like the Walcotts, like Tim Marciano, people who probably deserve to die even if they can't prove it. Styles looks over at Derek. He's standing right beside Phil and Jake now, with one comforting hand on Jake's shoulder. He shakes his head at Styles.
So,
Styles says, letting out a slow breath. To Derek, he says, hold him. What? Jake asks, turning to look questioningly between Derek and Styles. But Derek is already moving. He has Phil by one wrist and has twisted his arm around, pinning him up against the wall. Jake lets out a surprised yelp, as do several of the others. Styles pushes his way over and grabs Phil's phone out of his back pocket.
Hey, let me go!
Phil sounds terrified.
Jake, help me!
Styles, what are you doing? Jake asks, torn between helping his brother and knowing that Styles probably has a reason for what's happening. Styles is studying the text history.
Wow, you sure text your dad a lot, given that you ran away from home and he's not supposed to know where you are,
he says, and Jake's eyes go wide. He lets out a helpless, wounded noise.
What's up with that? Let me go!
Phil shouts again, but he sounds less afraid and more angry now.
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen,
Styles is quickly scrolling through the text messages.
So, you've been telling your father everything that happened since you got here. That's nice. You obviously smuggled them some of Chris's hair, or he wouldn't be acting like a fucking lunatic. Anything else you've been doing that I should know about?
I'm not gonna tell you anything!
Phil, why? Jake asks, pushing both hands through his hair.
Why would you do this? Aunt Victoria and Uncle Chris were so nice to you. They took you in even though it could have gotten them in trouble. Everyone here wanted to help you.
They're just liars. You're all liars.
Styles' mouth thins. He doesn't have time to try to get through to Phil, who's obviously been brainwashed by his parents.
We've got zip ties in here, he asks, and Allison nods.
Okay, secure him. Gently. And watch him. He might only be 12, but he's an Argent.
Okay. Allison pulls out a bag of zip ties and tosses it to Isaac.
A minute later, Phil is trussed up like a turkey and has gone sullen and quiet. Styles rubs his hands over his face. Chris is under the influence of black magic, and there's absolutely nothing Styles can do about it. Not while he's trapped in this tiny room with no way out. No phone, no nothing. They'll have to get Chris back to Deaton's. Somehow.
I can wait all day, Styles, Chris says from outside. I brought rations. Pretty sure you didn't.
Hey, Derek says quietly. I just figured something out. What was bothering me about the bag? You asked me if I smelled something. Well, the answer is yes, but I couldn't figure out why it affected me like that until I had a minute to think about it. It was perfume. Kate's perfume.
Styles blinks up at him. Then he looks at the door.
Then Chris is still fighting the spell, he says. He had to obey, but it didn't stop him from adding something that he knew would convey a warning, even if the spell didn't realize and stop him.
Derek nods.
Yeah.
Styles thinks about that for another moment. Then he speaks quietly to make sure Chris can't hear him in the hallway.
We have exactly one thing going for us, which is that he seems very reluctant to kill Allison. We've got grenades in here, right?
A few, yeah, Scott says.
Okay.
Styles nods, slowly.
Allison, are you willing to bet your life on the fact that your father won't let you get killed?
Absolutely, Allison says.
I wish we could see where he was standing,
Styles says. Derek presses his ear against the crack of the door. Everyone falls silent while he listens. After what seems like an eternity, he says,
He's about 20 feet away. That's my best guess. A few feet in front of the entry to the living room.
Okay, Styles says again. Here's what we're gonna do. He continues and outlines the plan quickly. Everyone retreats to the opposite end of the armory. Styles hands the grenade to Derek, who crouches by the door.
Dad?
Allison lets her voice waver.
I'm coming out, okay? Don't shoot me!
Just you, Chris warns. Anyone else, I'll shoot.
Okay.
Allison undoes the security and then steps out into the hallway. Styles glances after her but pulls back quickly. Chris is holding a rifle. And he has it up, but not specifically aimed. His finger isn't on the trigger. When nobody comes out behind Allison, he lowers it.
I just want to talk without that wall between us, she says.
There's nothing to talk about, Chris says. Come over here and get behind me.
Allison takes a slow step forward. Derek takes a quick glance in the hallway to gauge her position. Then he pulls the pin out of the grenade and tosses it down the hallway, keeping it low so it'll hit the floor and bounce. Chris sees it immediately and shouts, "Get down!" Then, as Styles had hoped he would, he jumps on Allison and knocks her to the floor, their momentum carrying them almost all the way down to the door to the armory and out of the blast range of the grenade. It goes off a few moments later, with a coughing pop that destroys about half their living room. Before Chris can even think, Allison has the stun gun out of her belt and jams it into her father's ribs.
His body goes tense and rigid, spasming helplessly. She pulls back a few moments later.
Dad?
She says cautiously. Chris Argent is more than capable of faking unconsciousness. When he doesn't respond, she presses the stun gun under his chin.
If you're still awake, don't make me use this,
she says, as Derek and Scott jog out into the hallway with a bag of zip ties. But Chris doesn't twitch as they get him secured. Stiles takes a few moments to breathe again.
Hey, we all survived! Yay!
He says, trying not to look at the mess that's been made of the den. Allison looks up at him.
We've got to get him to Deaton's, she says.
Yep, Stiles says. Erica, Isaac, take Jake and Phil down to the police station. Put Phil in holding. Tell my dad I'll explain later. Scott, call Deaton and tell him we're on the way. Allison, call your mother. We have no way of knowing if she's been compromised too, so don't tell her what happened. Just that you need to talk to her and have her come to Deaton's. If she tries to kill us, well, at least he'll be right there to stop her. Derek, Boyd, Danny, all three of you are to keep your eyes on Chris at all times. Don't even fucking blink. Clear? Okay, let's go.